Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It's Friday, December 8th, 2023, 1 o'clock. We are back on the record in the matter of the appeal of the critical area buffer reduction, notice of administrative decision number 22-02629. I believe that at this point, the applicant was going to call Carolyn Becker. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. Decker. Good afternoon, Ms. Decker.
Good afternoon.
You can hear me all right?
I can, yes.
Great. Okay. Please raise your right hand. You swear affirm the testimony you give today is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right, Ms. Liao, you may proceed.
Okay, thank you. Can you please state your name for the record?
Carolyn Decker.
And what is your professional expertise?
I'm a licensed geotechnical engineer.
Thank you. I'm going to go ahead and share my screen. All right. Is this here that I'm showing? This is a, I believe, Respondents Exhibit 28. Is this a copy of your resume?
Yes.
Okay. Could you please tell us about your post-high school education?
I have a Bachelor's of Science degree in civil engineering from Gonzaga University.
Do you have any certifications or professional licenses in your field?
Yes, I am a licensed professional engineer in Washington State and Oregon State.
How long have you been continuously licensed? Oh, sorry, how long have you been licensed in Washington State?
13 years.
And have you been working continuously in Washington since during that 13-year period?
Yes.
When you took the licensing examination for to become a licensed civil engineer, did you select a specific engineering profession for purposes of testing?
Yes, I did.
And what was that?
Geotechnical engineering.
Okay, so from a licensing perspective, are you you're that is that what qualifies you to be a specialist as a geotechnical engineer? That having taken that portion of the exam?
Yes, and working in the industry continuously.
Okay, great. Thank you. Can you describe the types of projects you've worked on as a geotechnical engineer?
As an engineer, I have worked on everything from single-family residential homes to 40-story towers with 8 to 10 levels of below-grade parking, to 1.3 million square foot industrial buildings, to 300 lot residential developments, to multifamily homes and apartments.
Great. Thank you. And can you just generally describe the your professional experience in serving as a geotechnical engineer with regards to both geotechnical conditions and hydrogeological site conditions?
As a geotechnical engineer, our primary objective in any project we work on is to study the geotechnical, geological, and hydrogeological conditions at the site.
Great, thank you. Where do you work currently?
Terra Associates Incorporated.
And how long have you been with Atera Associates?
It'll be 17 years in January.
And what is your current position with Terra?
I am the president.
In your role as president, do you oversee other staff?
Yes, I do.
Do the staff that you oversee, are those other licensed professionals?
Yes, I have professional engineers. I have licensed geologists, licensed engineering geologists, and licensed hydrogeologists, all of who work for me.
Okay, and you oversee all that range of work that
Yes,
you.
I do.
Okay, great. Thank you. Prior to serving as president, did you hold other roles at Terra?
Yes, I've been a lab technician at Terra, I've been a field technician, and I've also been a project engineer.
Great, thank you. And have you worked anywhere else prior to Terra?
Yes, for 1.5 years, I was a project engineer for Malcolm Drilling, working on the light rail from Martin Luther K Boulevard to the airport.
Great, thank you. Have you been present for all of the testimony provided in this hearing so far?
The majority of it, yes.
And on what subject matters will you be providing testimony?
Geotechnical, geological, and hydrogeologic.
I'd like to move to admit exhibit R28 and establish Ms. Decker as an expert in those three areas that she just identified.
Okay. Mr. Telligen.
No objection.
Okay, thank you. R28 is admitted and Ms. Decker is established as an expert in those three fields.
Thank you. Ms. Decker, when did Terra Associates become involved with the Arborwood project?
We became involved in early 2021.
And what is the scope of services that Terra Associates has been providing on the Arborwood project since 2021?
Initially, we were tasked with updating the geotechnical reports for the various phases and initially for the entire Arborwood development. We've also been providing construction observation and testing in the Pulte phases in the southern portion of Arborwood.
As a part of your work, did Terra Associates review the Zipper-Zeman 2007 report that appellants identified as Exhibit A11?
Yes, we did.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and show that on my screen here in just a minute. And let's see. And were you present for the testimony of Mr. Lubisher?
I was, yes.
Okay, great. So, apologize. Okay, so here is that Zipper-Zeman report. And I believe in Mr. Lubisher's testimony, he provided, he spoke to the test pits that Zipper-Zeman had performed in this and is addressed in this report. Do you recall that testimony?
I do.
Okay. Can you just generally describe what this figure two of the Zipper-Zeman report shows?
Yeah, this is their exploration location plan where they're showing the approximate location of their field work, which in this case was test pits.
Okay. I'm going to zoom in here. So Mr. Lubisher provided quite a bit of testimony on this test pit 115, and he suggested it was close in vicinity to wetland P2. Do you recall that testimony?
I do.
Okay. Is wetland P2 shown on this same figure in this report?
Not clearly.
Okay. And are there any other test pits shown in the vicinity of wetland P2, at least based on your general knowledge of where that is, even though it's not shown on this? On this figure?
No.
Okay. All right, now I'm gonna go to the other report that I believe the appellants admitted into the record. This 2021 report, Exhibit A10, did Terra prepare this report?
Yes.
And did you oversee the work that was done in preparation of this report?
Yes.
Okay, very good. First of all, because there was the Zipper-Zeman report back in 2007 for Arborwood, and then you come in 2021 to provide a report, why did you provide an updated report for the Arborwood project?
We were tasked with providing the updated report to better reflect the proposed development and updated code requirements since 2007. We were primarily looking for fatal flaws that would have required the project to be reconfigured in any way, shape, or form.
Okay. Was there more information known to you at the about Arborwood in terms of its development as compared to what Zipper-Zeman had before them in 2007? I'm thinking of like more specific plans or construction proposals.
I believe we did. The phases were better defined and when we began in 21 than they were in 07. There were also some preliminary grading plans that had been created for phases 1 and 2, which are in the southern portion of the site.
And did Terra perform on-site evaluations in preparing this report?
Yes, we did.
Okay, I'm going to go to this page. Yes, sorry. I get confused by the various page numbers. I'm going to rotate this. Let's see if I can do this efficiently. So it is north facing, you know, I'm going to do it the slow way because that's the way I knew to do it quickly. And then rotate this so that north is at the top. Okay, can you just generally describe to us what this figure two of the 2021 Terra Associates Geotechnical Report is showing?
So these are our this is our exploration location plan, which shows the approximate location of our field work, which in this case was test pits and test borings.
What's the difference between a test pit and a test boring?
A test pit is conducted with an excavator. It's a fairly invasive process where we come out and you dig a hole and you check the soil and groundwater conditions as well as the relative density, depending on how the excavator is moving through the material. A boring is completed with an actual boring machine or a drill rig, as we call it, where you advance a hollow stem auger and take what are called STPs, which is a standard penetration test. You use that information to determine the relative density of the material. And then samples are removed while you are taking those STPs that allows you to evaluate the soil and groundwater conditions in those holes.
I see. Okay, great. Thank you. Let's see. So, is wetland P2 shown on your figure here showing where you did test pits and test borings?
Yes.
Yes. And I'll just zoom in. Is this based on your understanding, is this the approximate location of wetland P2? We've been spending a lot of time on this in different configurations.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So, what, based on Tara's work, what is the closest test pit or test boring that you made in the relative to wetland P2?
So our closest exploration is test pit TP1.
And that is that right here? Okay, great. Did Tara, so Tara didn't conduct any test pits or test borings closer into wetland P2. Is it was there a reason for that?
Yes, so test pits and test borings are a rather destructive method of determining soil and groundwater conditions. As such, when you have a known wetland and a known wetland buffer, it is your job as the engineer and as the field technician to avoid those areas at all cost. You can get in actually quite a bit of trouble if you do significant damage to a wetland or a wetland buffer.
Very good. Mr. Lubisher to testify that as I mentioned that he thought the location of the Zipper-Zeeman test pit 115 was and I'll go back to that here. Yeah, so test pit 115, he testified that he thought that was approximately in the vicinity of wetland P2 based on visual comparison of this exhibit and then the site plan where or critical area report, something that which had shown where wetland P2 was relative to the site. Have you since performed your own visual inspection of these two, you know, where wetland TP115 is in comparison to what, excuse me, where test pit 115 is in comparison to wetland P2?
I have.
Okay. And did you prepare anything, an exhibit or visual representation of that visual comparison?
Yes, we put together a PDF that showed the results of our overlays.
Okay, so I'd like for you to talk a little bit about those overlays. So is this that visual representation that you created?
Yes.
Okay, and so this is our respondents exhibit R35. Can you describe how you went about creating this document?
Yes, yeah, so I use two different computer programs to put this together. The first one I use is AutoCAD because we can pull both our exploration location plan as well as the Zipper-Zeeman exploration location plan. Using property lines, we can scale them and see if we've got consistent scales and consistent sizes between them. Once we've determined if that is correct and if they overlay properly, we then export those scaled drawings into Photoshop, where you can then make one of the overlays more transparent so it's easy to see. Like we see here, it's sort of a faded co composite of the two drawings.
I see. So this is the Zipper-Zeeman. One of the layers shows the Zipper-Zeeman report, and the other layer shows the Terra, sorry, the Zipper Zeman figure, and then the other shows the Terra figure that we just saw in Exhibit 10. Am I tracking you correctly?
Yes, so if we recall the zipper one, that's got quite a bit of topography on it. It's very dark, and our exploration didn't have all those lines. So the zipper one is sitting on top just because it had more information and more topography, and I put ours underneath, just so that we could make sure that they were in alignment.
I see. So those colored areas, that's from your report that we can just kind of faintly see. That's the layer underneath the Zipper Zeman.
Correct.
Okay, great. And is there another layer that you then added to this as well, this figure as well?
Yeah, so once we've got the overlays and we're confident that we have a good composite drawing, I then create a third layer where I will kind of start marking explorations that I feel are relevant to what I'm trying to see. So what I was trying to find was where is Zipper's test pit 115 in relation to wetland P2. So I put a red dot on test pit 115, and then just to make sure I'm orientating myself correctly, I also put a dot on our test pit one.
Okay, very good. I'm going to advance this exhibit a page, and then I'm going to ask you to describe. Is this a similar document, or what's the relationship to this document and the first page of the, excuse me, the second page? What's the relationship between the second page and the first page of this exhibit that we just looked at?
So these are the same document. It's the same document. It's the same composite. All I've done is turned off the Zipper Zeman layer so you can more clearly see where their test pit 115 is in relation to the rest of the Alderwoods or Arborwood site.
Okay, and what did you conclude about the location of the test put 115, at least as shown on the Zipper Zeman report, in relationship to the wetlands, at least shown on the Terra version of the site?
So when looking at this, it appears as if Zipper Zeman actually dug their test pit 115 within the wetland boundary itself. Now, in 2007, the geotechnical community was still relying on visual observations using topography and hip change to orientate yourself in the field. GPS didn't come online until a few years later. I believe we started using it pretty widely in about 2010, 2012, somewhere in there. And so at that time, your locations were pretty approximate. So you're kind of like, okay, I think this is where I am. I think this is where it is on the plan. And if you look at the Zipper Zeman plan, there's a lot of lines on there. There's a lot of topography on there. I think it would be a challenge to, really make sure you are in the right location when you're putting this in. I don't believe Zipper Zeman actually dug this test pit in the wetland boundary itself. There's indications of what wetlands are, and most geotechnical engineers, geologists, and hydrogeologists can recognize something in the ground, even if it's not flagged, not mapped, and to pull yourself away from there. So while I don't believe it's in the wetland, it was probably very close to here, and I do believe it was on the west side of wetland P2.
I see. So at least when you said that you observed that, at least again based on your visual representation, that the TP 115 dot shows up in the middle of a wetland. We're referring to not wetland P2, but is this that L1 L2 wetland?
That's my understanding, yes.
Yeah.
Not
So
I'm not
and
an expert in wetlands. I don't
so
like to
sorry,
let you go there.
it's not this one that we've been talking quite a bit about, which is P2. It's this larger wetland here, based on your observations. Is that correct?
Correct.
Yeah, okay. And at least you've just testified that you think that at least if we're basing this on, if at least Zipper Zeman's what they showed on their figure about the location of their test pit 115 is that even if this isn't the precise location, i.e. in this wetland L1 or L2, you think it would have at least likely been west of wetland P2. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, very good. I'd like to move to admit exhibit R35.
Okay, Mr. Telegin.
I guess I'm going to just keep the same standing objections before, but I understand that you're letting everything in.
Yes. Okay. All right. Yeah. R30. I'm sorry. It was R35. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. R35 admitted. All righty. Thank you.
Great. Thank you very much. All right. I'm going to ask you some questions about your report, and if you need me to pull it up, let me know. But Ms. Decker, any TERRA's 2021 geotechnical analysis. What did TERRA conclude, generally speaking, regarding the depth of groundwater on the Arborwood North site?
We concluded that the groundwater was deep groundwater, relatively speaking, that was anywhere from about 9 to 10 feet below site grades.
And that was based on your test pits and test borings that you made that conclusion about the depth and the availability of groundwater. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Did you hear Mr. Lubischer's testimony regarding his theory as to the existence of perched groundwater on the site?
Yes.
Now, Mr. Lubischer, I believe, stated that he only believed perched groundwater, at least in the vicinity west of wetland P2, was available at a depth of 4 feet. Is that consistent with what you recall?
Yes, it is.
Is Mr. Lubischer's conclusion about the availability of perched water only at the depth of 4 feet consistent with what TERRA observed in 2021 or its conclusions in its 2021 report regarding
No.
the depth? Yeah. And why is that?
So when we dug down and dug into those upper 4 feet where we would have expected to see a shallow perched groundwater table based on what we know of the geology, there was no evidence of it. Typically, if you have a perched groundwater layer, you will see something that indicates it's there, either modeling or iron staining or the groundwater itself. None of those conditions were observed in the upper 4 feet of our explorations.
And those are in your other test pits that we saw, at least in the in exhibit A11. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. So, based on your observations of the other test pits, you did not see evidence of perched water groundwater on the site. What did TERRA conclude in its report regarding the types of soil on the site, at least after the 2021 report?
So we concluded that they were glacial deposits consisting of medium dense to very dense silty sand and silty sand with gravel overlying a very stiff to hard sandy silt to silt that were interpreted to be glacial till and undifferentiated pleistocene deposits.
Okay, so for those type of soil conditions, can you describe what the typical groundwater conditions would be through soils of that nature?
So typically what we would expect to see is some level of shallow perched groundwater within the upper weathered material that would overlie the deeper unweathered material. In the glacial till material, we would also potentially expect to see some deeper seepage that could be within sand layers within the glacial till formation.
I see. We've heard some testimony regarding the compaction of fill and the ability of groundwater to move or at least flow, I should say, maybe that might be the right better word, through a compacted fill site. In this sort of pre-developed state with the groundwater, the soil conditions as they are, how does groundwater flow through those types of soils? And again, their undeveloped state.
So in their native state, which is what we would describe these, the water is going to find the more permeable layers of the material. Typically, it's within that upper weathered zone, which tends to not be as dense, and so the water can flow through it more quickly. If it is deeper, they're typically within more permeable layers, sand. Sometimes there's a gravel layer within a glacial till formation that will allow the water to flow through the materials.
And I've been kind of just asking you generally about what you expect in terms of groundwater conditions based on the type of soils that you observed. Did you observe, what were the actual observations on this that you, TERRA had made on the site back in 2021 about how groundwater was flowing through those soils that are existing on the site today?
So our actual observations indicated that there was not a shallow perched groundwater table on this site. We did observe evidence of the deeper groundwater seepage, typically between 9 and 10 feet below grade. And this is what we would consider a persistent groundwater seepage, just based on its depth.
Okay. So the water didn't just stay at that perched level, that the groundwater was actually going to that deeper 9 foot depth that you were observing. Am I tracking that correctly?
The deeper 9 foot is actually probably coming from somewhere up gradient. of our site. It certainly would not be coming vertically through the formation. It's coming from upsite. It's finding those more permeable layers and then flowing along that gradient.
I see. So when we, I don't know, were you present for the testimony of Mr. Moody?
Yes.
So when you talk about water being available up gradient, so if we're talking about that sort of east of wetland P2 area, so if water was up gradient on that hill bend development, would you mean that the water getting to those lower depths might be coming up gradient from that ridge that he showed in some of the exhibits? Is that, am I tracking that correctly when you say up gradient?
Yeah, the ridge or even further, the deeper layers of the more permeable material could be coming from miles away from the site. The actual source of the deeper perched groundwater is not as easy to track as the shallow perched groundwater.
I see. Fair enough. But at least the there is water available at that lower level in that 9-foot range. So just to
yes.
Simplify it. So my apologies. I did not take advanced science courses in college. So all right. Based on just having reviewed the results of the Zipper-Zeman report and Terrace 2021 report, what would you have hypothesized regarding the depth and flow of groundwater in the vicinity of wetland P2 at just again, based on those two reports?
Based on those two reports, I would have thought that there potentially was some shallow perched groundwater coming from either north, south, or west of the P2 wetland, and that the from the east side, we would be seeing the deeper perched groundwater that was discharging at some point within the wetland vicinity.
Okay. So at least in terms of available water at the groundwater state. We have heard about surface water before, but from a groundwater perspective, you would expect that water would be available from multiple sources to wetland P2. Is that the multiple directions and potentially even multiple layers within the soil table? Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. After 2021, did Terra perform any additional on-site evaluations of Arborwood?
We did. We have done site-specific studies for phase 2, phase 3, phases 4 and 5, and phase 6.
Okay. Did you dig any more test pits after 2021 at the request of Taylor Morrison, in particular, in the vicinity of wetland P2?
We did, yes.
Okay, and just approximately where did you do those investigations? At least, let's just say, relative to any of the infrastructure we've been looking at on the site.
Sure. So again, due to the wetland and its buffer and our knowledge of it, we did not go as far south as potentially we could have, but the explorations were completed within the spine road alignment.
Okay.
As well as in the proposed detention bond.
Okay. So you did some additional testing in after 2021. Do you remember the approximate timeline in which you did this additional testing?
The test pits were completed, I want to assume, I have that, just a moment. The additional test pits were completed in August of 21 after the after our July report, and then they were combined into a site-specific report in September of 2022.
Okay, very good. And you said you did additional test pits in the vicinity of the spine road. Do you happen to remember if that was north, south, or adjacent to this wetland P2, just generally speaking?
It was just north of the sort of outline of the buffer on the plans that we had.
Okay. So here, I'll tell you what, I know that we don't have that additional report in the record, but let me just pull up this. We'll just use this for just demonstrative purposes. So you said north of the buffer, so it might have been somewhere, would you say south of test put one, in east of test put one, or just directly east of just approximate?
I'd say our furthest south pit was actually right where the light pink is turning to more of the dark pink at that line.
Oh, okay.
And then we had two other test pits just kind of north of those.
Okay.
I believe we spaced them about 100 feet apart.
Okay,
Like
so additional test pits in those areas as well. Very good. What were your findings in those particular test pits?
They were very consistent with what we had previously found. We had medium dense silty sand with silt material overlying the very stiff to hard silts. Groundwater was actually anywhere from 9 to 12 feet down in these particular test pits with no evidence of a shallow perched groundwater table.
Very good. And so those just effectively, did those give you more confirmation of your original hypothesis, again, just based on the 2021 TERRA report and the Zipper-Zeman, these additional pieces of evidence seem to support that original hypothesis. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay, very good. Has TERRA Associates done any additional geotechnical evaluation of the site since the second round of evaluation?
Yes.
And when was that conducted?
We were actually out there on November 27th.
Very good. Why did TERRA Associates perform additional on-site analysis on November 27th?
Mr. Lubisher, in his testimony, had stated that he believed the recessional outwash layer that was observed in the Zipper-Zeman report extended to the east from the eastern edge of wetland P2 to the eastern property line of the Arborwood development.
I see. And based on what you had just described about the test pits that you had done in kind of later 2021 with north of the spine row, did his testimony that was that inconsistent with what you had found?
It was. We hadn't found the recessional outwash layer that was noted in the Zipper-Zeman report. None of our explorations in that area seemed to indicate that the recessional outwash extended that far.
Okay. But you went out on November 27th to take a closer look. Again.
Yes, to actually dig within the wetland boundary, because I felt it was prudent for us to understand if this was here, it might change what we need to do on the site.
Okay, very good. Who conducted that on-site evaluation?
John Sadler conducted it.
Okay, and who is John Sadler?
John Sadler is our senior geologist, hydrogeologist. He's been working for TERRA since, I shouldn't have started with that. He's been here forever. I'm actually not sure when he started, but he's been doing this for over 37 years.
Okay, very good. And did you direct and oversee Mr. Sadler's work in performing this additional analysis?
I did, yes.
Okay. And can you specifically describe what you instructed him to do while he was on site?
So we went over the plan. I showed him kind of where it was and what we were trying to accomplish. I showed him what the Zipper-Zeman test pit 115, about where we thought it was. And I asked him to go out and dig with hand equipment, because we were not going to go into a wetland with an excavator, and get down at least 4 to 5 feet to just see what the soil and groundwater conditions were east of P2. I also asked him to go north and south, as well as to the immediate west of P2.
Okay, excellent. Did Mr. Sadler memorialize his findings in a memorandum?
He did.
Okay, I'm going to bring that up here. So this is Respondents Exhibit R29. And Ms. Decker, this memorandum, again, what's the date of this?
This is November 28th, 2023.
And this followed his November 27th site visit, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And you have reviewed and overseen the work in this report, is that correct?
I have, yes.
Okay. Let's see. Did Mr. Sadler draw conclusions regarding the soils and presence of groundwater in this memorandum?
He did, yes.
And do you stand by those findings and conclusions?
I do.
Okay. Let's see. I apologize. I'm going to go to figure one of this report here. So can you... Can you describe what this figure one in your report, in Tara's report, shows?
So these are the approximate location, or actually, these aren't the approximate locations. These are the locations of the hand augers that Mr. Sadler completed. We actually had them surveyed in the field so that we knew we were in an accurate spot, according in relation to wetland P2.
Excellent. So let me just make sure. So this believe is this, am I correct in tracing out here the outline effectively of wetland P2?
Correct.
Okay. So each of these, I guess I shouldn't call them test pits. These are test holes, is that right?
Yes.
Okay. So test holes 101 through 106, those go east to west. Let's see. And they start, is this, let me zoom in here. They start, is this the east of the proposed location of the spine road, test hole 101?
Yes.
Okay. And this test hole 102, this is approximately underneath the proposed location, at least of where the spine road would be.
Yes.
And then 103, just east of wetland P2. 104 and 105, north and south of wetland P2 in the middle.
Yes.
And then 106, is this just west of wetland P2, maybe between P2 and L1, L2?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Let's see. I'm going to actually go to page one of this report. Can you just summarize for us? Did he make observations about the surface conditions of this area that he took a look at? And
Yes, he did.
can you just generally summarize those surface conditions that he analyze or describes in his report?
Sure. So initially, when he looked out at the site, he observed that the locations were in the approximate center or the axis of a west draining natural drainage feature, known, commonly known as a gully. There was an older fill embankment along the east side that appeared to be an old logging skid road that actually had created a closed depression on the neighboring property to the east. There was an approximately 1 foot diameter corrugated pipe that was running through the embankment to allow drainage of any surface water from that closed depression on the neighboring property to flow through the site. There was a little bit of water in the closed depression when they were out there, but there was no indication of recent flow through the culvert and no indication of recent flow down gradient of the culvert. They also observed they. Mr. Sadler also observed a north south trending skid road over the lower end of the gully, just along the western edge of the wetland P2, with a similar culvert going through it. There was no indications of surface water when they were in the drainage area, but they did observe wet soils that they were just standing on.
Okay, very good. I'd like to ask you about Mr. Sadler's observation in each of those test holes that, again, were going 101 to 106 east to west. I'm going to just go through, just I'll bring up each of the logs of the test holes so you can reference that as need be for each of those test holes. But before I do, I'd like to ask you for help clarifying a term we've been using quite a bit. We've heard quite a bit about recessional outwash. And then Mr. Lubisher testified to that quite extensively. Can you describe to me the recessional outwash as compared to another type of soil, colluvium? Because I think you're going to alluvium and colluvium, which I think we're going to be hearing from you about in these test logs.
Yes. So recessional outwash is a glacial deposit that was placed as the last glaciers receded following the most recent ice age, which was approximately 11,500 years ago. The drainage alluvium colluvium is a more recent deposit that will develop over time as there is erosion from an upper area to a lower area where fine grained particles are deposited in a relatively level area.
Okay, great. Thank you. All right, now let's go through each of these test holds. So in test hold 101, so this is the one just east of the spine road, what did he observe with respect to both soils and groundwater in test hold one?
So in test hold 101, he observed about 12 inches of a forest duff topsoil material overlying a silty sand with gravel that was fine grained that he interpreted to be an alluvium colluvium material. There was modeling observed about 2.5 feet below grade, as well as very light groundwater seepage observed at approximately 1 foot below grade.
Okay, very good. So then as we go to test hole number 102, again, just I believe that's to the west, right under the spine road. What were the observations there?
So in this one, the layer of forest duff or topsoil reduced to about 6 inches, overlying similar silty sand with gravel materials, alluvium and colluvium. From the top to the bottom, there was, however, in this one, a bit more groundwater seepage observed about 3 feet below grade.
Very good. And then we get to test hole 103, which I believe, again, further to the west still, closer to wetland P2.
Yes. So in this one, we had about 9 inches of the forest duff and topsoil layer overlying the silty sand with gravel, alluvium, colluvium that had been seen in test holes 101 and 102. But there was no groundwater or evidence of groundwater in this particular handhole, test hole.
Right. So no groundwater at test hole 103.
Correct.
Okay. So then moving on to test hole 104, which I believe was just north of the wetland P2.
Yes. So in this one, we had 6 inches of forest duff and topsoil overlying a silty sand layer that was interpreted to be the recessional outwash that had been seen in Zipper-Zeman's test pit 115. This layer extended down approximately 4.5 feet where they found a layer of silt interpreted to be recessional lacustrine soils. As they broke through that, they found a sand soil that was interpreted to be recessional outwash. The light groundwater seepage was observed within the sandier layers within the recessional lacustrine level, as well as the deeper sand unit was wet.
Very good. Test hole 105, just south of wetland P2.
Again, 6 inches of the forest ups and topsoil layer. We again found the silty sand with gravel recessional outwash layer that had been observed, thus extended down approximately 3.5 feet, where it became slightly siltier, more of a sandy silt to silty sand, again, the recessional lacustrine level, before again getting through to the sand layer. No groundwater was observed in this handhole.
Okay. And then finally, test pit 106. So this is west of wetland P2.
In this test hole, we observed approximately 1 foot of what was interpreted to be a fill material. And the distinction is typically found in texture or in the just composition of the material itself is how we distinguish between what is considered a fill versus what is considered a native layer. Underlying that, the silty sand with gravel alluvium deposit was observed again to a depth of approximately 3 feet, where the silty sand with gravel recessional outwash layer was observed. The test hole in this particular case was terminated at 4 feet on refusal of some very dense gravels, but there was light groundwater seepage at 4 feet.
Okay, very good. So I'm going to go back to the map just so we can refresh ourselves. So there's those locations of these test holes again. So based on the observations by Mr. Sadler about soil conditions and groundwater seepage at each of these test holes, what is your conclusion now with regards to the hydrology regarding wetland P2?
So now it appears that the wetland is fed from shallow perched groundwater seepage that is within the recessional outwash layer north and south of the wetland, very likely along with the deep groundwater seepage and surface water that was seen east of the wetland.
Very good. So from a shallow surface level of groundwater is being observed north and south, but you also believe based on your other work that there is groundwater available at a lower depth at 9 feet based on all the test pits that you've done otherwise on the site. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. Any observations with respect to your findings here, test holes 101, 102, and 103?
So we did observe shallow groundwater in test holes 101 and 102. So that would indicate that the water is flowing in that direction at a relatively shallow depth. However, there is no evidence of water at all in 103, indicating that the shallow seepage is likely discharging along that soil face much sooner than getting down into the deeper ground.
I see. So there, to the extent that there's groundwater here, the idea that it would be continuing to flow to the east is not supported, at least to the extent that test hole 103 doesn't have any groundwater evident at that same layer. Or, excuse me, and I'm talking about that 4 foot level that you guys evaluate in your test hole. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. And for the shallow seepage.
For the shallow seepage. Thank you very much. Okay. And again, just going back to the testimony of Mr. Lubisher regarding perch groundwater as a source of hydrology for wetland P2, do these conclude? How do you interpret his hypothesis in conjunction with the results that you found here? What information do you? Excuse me. Let me just ask a simple question. I apologize. It's already late in the day for me. With these results. Do these results support Mr. Lubisher's hypothesis that there is a perch groundwater table that is traveling from east to west to contribute to wetland P2?
No.
Okay. Thank you. I'm going to move to admit exhibit R29.
Okay. Mr. Telegin?
Same objection as before, but I understand.
Yes. I appreciate that noted, and I will allow admission of this exhibit.
Okay, just a couple more questions for you, Ms. Decker. Do you recall Mr. Lubisher's testimony regarding his professional credentials?
Yes.
I believe he stated that he is licensed as a mechanical engineer. Is that correct?
Yes.
Recall, I should say.
Yes, is what I recall.
Yeah, that's what you recall, right. Can you speak to the difference between Mr. Lubisher's credentials as a mechanical engineer compared to your credentials as a civil engineer?
Yeah, so when you take the professional engineering exam, you select your area of expertise that you are going to be tested in. As a mechanical engineer, Mr. Lubisher would have selected to be tested as a mechanical engineer, allowing the committee to realize he had extensive knowledge within mechanical engineering and those various components. I selected geotechnical engineering because that was my area of expertise and that was the area that I worked in. And so I was actually tested on my knowledge of everything geotechnical, which included geology and hydrogeology.
Great. And Mr. Sadler, you said that he's a licensed geologist, hydrogeologist as well. Is that correct?
He's actually a licensed engineering geologist and a licensed hydrogeologist.
Thank you. You always do a good job of correcting me on these. Would that mean he would have had to, like you, test to demonstrate his knowledge in those areas in order to maintain that license?
Yes. So he would have been tested first as a geologist, then as an engineering geologist, and then as a hydrogeologist.
Okay, very good. Do you recall Mr. Rosine's testimony regarding excavation and fill necessary to construct Spine Road A adjacent to wetland P2?
Yes.
Okay. And I believe he testified that fill compaction during construction will create a dam that he believed would inhibit groundwater flow in the post-development condition compared to the pre-development condition. I believe he said that it would become a low porosity system as a result of that compaction. Do you recall that testimony?
Yes, I do.
Do you agree with his opinions on that?
I do not. Native soils, particularly the native soils in this area, are a very dense, silty sand with gravel material. It's cemented. It's has very low permeability. Groundwater and water in general does not want to go through this material. When you remove that material, you inherently make it less dense. And we do not possess the machinery to recompact it to its native state. Compacted material will always be less dense than that same material in its native condition.
I see.
So by having a compacted fill embankment, we have actually created a less permeable formation for water to potentially flow through.
So it's maybe in some ways the opposite of what has been the conclusion that I think has been implied, that if you remove that soil and then you that's there and that you bring in additional fill and you compact it, if anything, it's potentially less porous than it is in its current pre-developed state. Am I tracking that correctly?
More porous.
More porous, excuse me. Thank you. Thank you for catching me on that. And then does it, you know, how does that fill sit that's been disturbed sit on top of the underlying till? I'm asking a question that I don't even know how to ask. So I think that I am going to just leave. Let me ask you, give me a second. Were you here for the testimony of Mr. Peacock and the questions that were asked to him just this morning?
Yes, I was.
Yeah, so I just am going to be more direct. So I think there was some questions directed to Mr. Peacock regarding adverse impacts because of the compaction of fill, again, related to soil conditions and the expectation of how groundwater would move through the subsurface from east to west to wetland P2. Would you agree with the implication that was being made in the questions to Mr. Peacock that there would be an adverse impact, again, because of the compaction of fill?
No.
Okay. No further questions at this time.
Okay. Mr. Getches, do you have any questions for this witness?
No, thank you.
Okay. Mr. Telligen.
Hello, Ms. Decker. I'm Mr. Telligen for the appellants. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Good. So let's see here. I am going to start with the Sadler report. So in the discussion of this report, he says, based on the conditions observed in the test holes, it appears that the primary sources of water contributing to recharge of wetland P2 are direct rainfall. I think I know what that is. Runoff, that's surface water, right?
Yes.
Okay. Did you guys look at what the path was for surface water runoff?
Just in the context of where the handholes were excavated, it appeared to be within a natural drainage gully.
I see. All of the test holes or just some of them?
The eastern three were located within that gully.
Yeah. What was it? 1, 2, and 3, right?
Yes.
One was sort of on the east side of the spine road, and then it followed the gully down with 2 in the middle and then 3 closest to the wetland?
Yes.
Yeah. And then it says shallow interflow. What is shallow interflow?
Shallow interflow is when the precipitation infiltrates through the upper weathered soil, becomes trapped on a less dense or in a more dense material, less permeable material, and follows that gradient down or whichever direction it goes.
Right. Did you say more dense and less dense? Are those the two, what separates those two types?
Less dense, more permeable, more dense, less permeable.
Right. More permeable, more permeable on top, less permeable on bottom.
Yes.
Right. And so when you say shallow interflow, does that differ from groundwater?
No.
Okay, so it says here, shallow interflow from adjacent areas during precipitation events and shallow interflow from the recessional outwash deposits on the northern side of the wetland. And so are those different shallow interflows? Do they both sit on recessional outwash deposits?
Not necessarily. Shallow interflow is just an indication of precipitation infiltrating through an upper weathered or less dense material.
Okay, so it doesn't necessarily have to sit on recessional outwash. It can sit on something else.
Yes.
Okay. And then it says the absence of groundwater seepage in test hole TH103 suggests that to the depths explored, there is no contribution of recharge to wetland P2 by groundwater interflow. And so that's why I asked you the question between the difference between shallow interflow and groundwater interflow, because here it seems to be drawing a distinction.
I don't believe so. Interflow is just a term used to describe groundwater flowing through soil materials.
So in this, when he says shallow interflow from adjacent areas, shallow interflow from recessional outwash deposits on the north side, but no groundwater interflow, that's distinguishing directions. It's not distinguishing types.
Correct.
Shallow interflow is the same as groundwater interflow.
In this case, yes.
I see. So the conclusion is just that there is zero contribution of recharge to wetland P2 by groundwater coming east up the gully.
To the depths explored in this area, there was no groundwater observed in the shallow portion. Mr. Sadler did not extend to the deeper explorations that we had previously done up gradient from this area.
Okay. So if I'm thinking about this, I'm just trying to visualize this. Well, I'll go down to your map. So here's your map. Does that mean basically that there is no contribution of groundwater to P2 that travels through the depths of your test holes to P2?
The shallow 5-foot depths, correct.
Right. So there could be then groundwater hitting, say, the bottom half of P2 or something like that, below those test holes.
I believe there is. The explorations we had completed to deeper, deeper explorations that we had completed indicated that groundwater is evident 9 to 12 feet below grade. That water is very likely discharging at some point within the wetland boundary.
I see. Okay. And those are from your test pits on the east side of the spine road?
East and north, yes.
East and north. Okay. And we know that, I think we know from your report, that there is shallow interflow at test hole 104.
Yes.
Right. And I wrote down in my notes that it was fit. I thought you said it, that the wetland was fed by shallow perched groundwater north and south on recessional outwash.
The recessional outwash was observed in 105. And while we did not see groundwater in 105, the location and the composition of that layer would indicate to me that the water flows through that layer should it get there. We're kind of at an odd time. It's just possible the water hadn't developed yet.
Right. And so I guess I'm just wondering where I thought you said that the wetland is fed primarily by shallow perched groundwater north and south on a recessional outwash layer. You can just correct me if I'm wrong. Is that what you said or is that what you meant?
Yes, that's what I meant.
Yeah. Okay. So the groundwater that comes into P2 through recessional outwash layers north and south, what's the contributing basin?
Oh, I don't know that.
Okay. So let me see here. Sorry, wrong image. So here's back to your Terra report, the first one you did in, I think, 2021. I've just put sort of two little yellow markers on here. Do you see those?
I do.
Does any of the groundwater that goes into P2 on those recessional outwash layers, does any of that include or collect water from the east side of the road between those two markers?
I don't know. We did not see a hydraulic connection between the recessional outwash and any of the soils that we observed on the east side of the spine road.
Okay. So you couldn't, so then you couldn't also either give like an approximation of relative volumes east or west of the road.
No, we don't have sufficient explorations to determine the volume of the recessional outwash layer.
Okay. There was seepage in 101 and 102. Those were close to, those on the east side of the spine road and then in the middle of the spine road, and then none in 103. That was sort of closer to the east edge of wetland P2, right?
Correct.
Could the water have already daylighted by that point?
Anything is possible. But the evidence that we saw is there was no evidence of a groundwater spring or seep at that particular location, at least none that was noted by Mr. Sadler during his observations. The water that was observed in 101 and 102, according to Mr. Sadler, appeared to be connected to the closed depression that was on the neighboring property to the east.
Yes, and you talked about there being a corrugated, or I'm sorry, not you, Mr. Sadler, talked about there being a corrugated metal culvert. Was that in line with that TP 101 and 102?
It was near it, yes.
You know if it was north or south or right in line? Okay. Do you know what that corrugated metal culvert collects?
It appears to allow the closed depression on the east side of the property a way for the water to get out.
Okay. You did your test pits in 2021. What was it? I have it written down here. In July?
We did our original test pits for this particular report in April.
Oh, I had down borings enabled test pits in July. Is that wrong?
Well, let's go find the double check. Oh, I apologize. You are correct. The test pits were completed in July. The borings were completed in April.
Okay. And do you know what precipitation was like in 2021? If it was a high or a low year?
I recall it was an average year. When we were looking at our groundwater studies, it seemed to fall in line with the kind of typical seepage that we would expect to see.
Okay. Why weren't the results of your August of 2021 borings on the east side of the Spine Road reported anywhere, at least not to my knowledge?
Those are in our, what is the date of this report? Our September 23, 2022 geotechnical study that we issued specifically for phases 4 and 5.
I see. And do you know the contributory basin of the 9-foot deep groundwater that you encountered on the east side of the Spine Road?
No.
Okay. If you were looking for fatal flaws in the design that would require reconfiguration, why didn't you do this analysis sooner?
Which analysis?
Where you went back out in November to figure out what's contributing to P2.
At the time, it wasn't anything that was on our radar. The soil and groundwater conditions were consistent with what we would have expected to see here. Groundwater contributions to P2 was not something that we were being asked to study and wasn't something that we felt was part of the scope that we were looking at.
Mm-hmm. And was that a scope that was decided by you or somebody else?
Typically, the scope is decided by us. We will occasionally have conversations with civil structural architects just to make sure that if there's something specific they want us to go look at, we look at that. But typically, we put together the scopes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. No further questions. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Telgen. Ms. Liao, do you have any redirect?
Apologies. Give me just a moment. Yeah, just actually one or two. Ms. Decker, last question that you were just asked about having looked at fatal flaws in the design back in 2021 and being asked about why you didn't look more closely until a week or two ago at the site specific to Wetland P2. I just want to recall your earlier testimony and ask you again, based on the work that you had done in 2021 and looking at that report as well as the Brzezemans, what was your conclusion about groundwater on the site, at least in terms of the depth of groundwater that you were observing?
We thought it was deep groundwater seepage. There, the groundwater was observed between 9 and, in our August 2021 test pits, between 9 and 12 feet below grade, with no evidence of a shallow groundwater table.
Okay. And were you made familiar with the appellant's appeal issue statement at some point before providing testimony here today?
Yes.
Yeah. And so at least with regards to some of the allegations that had been made with regards to the availability of water or groundwater, excuse me, reaching P2, at that point in time, before you had done this additional analysis, did your prior observations of groundwater being available at 9 feet deep, did that influence your thinking about, you know, how you might respond to these allegations that groundwater might not be available to Wetland P2 in the developed condition?
Yes.
Yes. And what conclusion did you make before going out to do the analysis?
Well, based on what we knew and based on what we were seeing, it appeared that the wetland was being fed by this deeper groundwater seepage. We didn't have the evidence of a shallow table. There wasn't really a lot of information around wetland P2. Our thought was, well, we have deep groundwater seepage. It appears to be persistent. We found it in July and August, which is typically the driest months of the year. So there was no reason to think that flow would be interrupted, particularly based on the grading that is proposed for this area.
Got it. So there wasn't any reason to say, are we wrong in that conclusion? Because everything that you had in front of you at that point in time was that there would be water available at 9 feet. So you wouldn't need to have gone out and further and analyzed really closely what the sources of groundwater were contributing to wetland P2, because you knew that there was water available as deep as 9 feet. Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. That is it. Thank you. No further questions.
Thank you, Ms. Liao. I forgot to ask Mr. Getchis if you have any questions on redirect.
Maybe just to make sure that I understood some of these points correctly, I think I did. And hello, Ms. Decker. So regarding the fill on the sides of the road, it sounded to me as though the way you testified was that while it may be compacted, it won't prevent the water, it won't be so compact that it becomes impervious to water, and water will still be able to infiltrate down into that. Is that how you explained it?
Yes, and to kind of further the point, when we build retaining walls, we install drainage. When we build these retaining walls against what is called a native cut, we will very often build a second drain between whatever backfill it is we're putting and the native cut. Because if water comes through the native cut and reaches the structural fill that we place behind these walls, it will saturate that fill because that fill is less dense than the native material, and it will allow that water to go through it. So in an effort to protect our fill, particularly with a retaining wall, we will install a secondary drain.
Okay, great. And then it sounds like there's different ways that water can get from east to west here. One is surface water, one is shallow groundwater, and one is deeper groundwater. Is that right?
We only found evidence of surface and deep. The shallow groundwater, while it's there, did not appear to be flowing all the way to the west.
Okay, that was because 103 was dry. That was the evidence that since test pit 103 was dry, that meant that indicates that shallow groundwater is not making it that far.
Correct.
103 was before you even get to P2.
Yes.
Okay. So, and then, but you still thought that there probably was deep groundwater. And if they're at like 9 or 11 feet down, did you say something like that?
Yeah, it's between 9 and 12.
Nine and 12 feet down. And what effect, if any, do you think the road, well, first, before we get to the deep, I guess if the shallow groundwater isn't making it all the way to P2 now, then it wouldn't matter if the road acted as a dam for that, because it's not making it all the way over anyway. But with the deep groundwater that's between 9 and 12, you think, what effect, if any, would the road have on that water?
I wouldn't suspect it to have any effect on the deeper groundwater seepage.
Okay, that's what I thought you were going to say. All right. Okay, I don't have anything else. Thanks.
Hey, Mr. Getches, thank you. Yes, Mr. Telligen.
So what elevations were the borings on the east side of the Spine Road?
The elevations?
Yeah.
The July ones, the August ones, or the November?
I thought you only did them in the ones you did in September of 2021, because they weren't in the in the report that you were showing the images of, and they're not in the one from November. So I thought it was the one that we don't have.
Okay, so we're talking about the ones that we did in August, and it looks like they are around elevation 126.
126, and you found groundwater at 10 feet deep at that time.
And that particular one, the groundwater was... Oh, we didn't find groundwater in that one. Oh, yeah, we did. This one, that one was 9 feet deep at the time.
So that would be at elevation 110?
No, the groundwater would be at 10... No, what is that? Oh, forget mental math. Be about elevation 117.
117. So it's that plane that you're saying is feeding groundwater into P2. The 9-foot, 10-foot deep groundwater that is then daylighting at P2.
It appears to be, yes.
Uh-huh. But you haven't gone down to actually look at that plane.
Not within the P2 wetland boundary. Hand excavations deeper than 6 or 7 feet tend to be extremely challenging, and disturbing a wetland and a wetland buffer with the equipment we would need to get to that depth is just not allowed.
I see. So even like where you put your test hole 103, you couldn't dig down to confirm that?
Not by hand.
Not by hand, not without bringing in big machinery.
Yes.
Okay, so then we're trying to make this estimation based on imperfect data then.
Geotechnical engineering is often based on imperfect data. We go and get the explorations we can. We interpret them between them as best we can. It's not perfect. It's not exact. There may be variations on site, but between what we know and what we find in our experience, we are typically able to create a relatively good picture of what is going on. The mm-hmm. deep groundwater is present. We've seen it in multiple locations. There, it seems to flow in that direction because that seems to be the gradient of everything, mm-hmm. Particularly with the wetlands in that area. That would indicate that that is the direction the water flows. Mm-hmm. Where it comes out within the wetland boundary, that we don't know.
Okay, let me ask you this. Suppose I'm your client and I tell you I want to figure out where the water is coming from into P2. What would you tell me to pay you to do?
Well, we would need to put together a groundwater study. We would need to look at placing observation wells in various locations and instrumenting them and monitoring the groundwater and seeing where it goes.
Mm-hmm. And if I wanted to know if the road, in this case, is going to cut off any of the water that's going to P2, what would you tell me to do?
Dig some explorations within the Spine Road.
All right. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Telligen. Any redirect from Ms. Liao?
No.
Mr. Getches?
Ms. Dicker, did we, of the different types of water, did we mention the surface water and the effect of the road on the surface water? I know I asked Mr. Moody about that. I don't know if you listened to his testimony about that, but I don't recall if I asked you about that part of it.
Surface water is something that we look at, but I don't necessarily consider myself an expert in it.
Okay, fair enough. All right, thanks. Nothing else.
Okay. Any other questions for this witness?
Nope.
Okay, great. Thank you, Ms. Dicker.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Liao, do you have any additional witnesses to call for your client?
We do not. I'm happy to say. And before we shift, I just need a 5-minute break. I apologize.
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Okay. We will come back at 2:20, everyone. Thank you.
Thank you.